Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 23rd of September. The results from the 2009 National Survey on Drug Use and Health have been released last week, and this hour of the program will look at those findings with the director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy joining us the first half hour. The second half hour, the child and adolescent psychiatrist and adolescent addiction specialist from Hazelden Center for Youth and Families. Just briefly, and we'll go into many of these findings, the rate of current illicit drug use among persons ages 12 and older in 2009, 8.7%. was higher than the rate in 2008. Marijuana was the most commonly used illicit drug. In 2009, 10.5 million persons aged 12 or older reported driving under the influence of illicit drugs during the past year. Also, between 2008 and 2009, the rate of current use of illicit drugs among young adults ages 18 to 25 increased from 19.6 to 21.2%, driven largely by an increase in marijuana use. We're going to be talking about these findings and more with our guest, who is Gil Karlikowski. Mr. Karlikowski was nominated by President Obama and confirmed by the U.S. Senate as the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. He coordinates all aspects of federal drug control programs and implementation of the president's national drug control strategy. He has 37 years of law enforcement and drug policy experience. He brings to the position, most recently serving 9 years as the chief of police for Seattle, Washington. He was also deputy director for the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, was twice elected to be president of the major city's Chiefs. Here's our phone number. I would imagine we're going to have a number of phone calls this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And if you would like to join us by email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Mr. Karlikowski, thank you very much for joining us.
Kathleen, thank you very much for having me.
What was most surprising about these? Not surprising. What was most alarming to you about these findings from the report?
Well, you're right. It wasn't particularly surprising because I think we saw a softening of young people's attitudes about the dangers of drugs over the last couple of years. We've seen them exposed to less anti-drug messaging, and of course they're exposed in the general media to a huge amount of pro-drug messaging. So there wasn't a surprise. When we looked at marijuana use and the fact that quite often marijuana has been associated, and I've met with dozens and dozens of high school students around the country, as some type of medicine, that is clearly a wrong message to be sending to young people. We saw an increase in ecstasy and an increase in methamphetamine. And although the percentages are high, the actual numbers of people are much lower. And so I think that there's great cause for concern, and you highlighted several of those things.
What about use of alcohol?
Alcohol is something also that the drug use survey does look at. We focus here in the Office of National Drug Control Policy on making sure that our messages also include underage drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we all know, alcohol is, although taxed, regulated, and controlled, is a significant problem for this country.
I wouldn't even know where you, and you talk about in the report the ease that people have in buying all of this. I wouldn't have a clue where you would go to buy any of these drugs. They're evidently readily available. How do people get them?
Well, I think that's also something that hasn't really been noticed as much, and that is that what is spiking a lot of drug use, what is clearly being seen in treatment, emergency room or emergency department visits, and also, really sadly, the number of fatalities due to drug overdoses is prescription drugs.
Mm.
And they're not manufactured on the stove. They don't come across a border. They come right out of parents' medicine cabinets, right out of extended care facilities and hospitals. And it is really, we're seeing a lot of attention to that.
And what are those drugs?
The prescription drugs that are certainly the most addictive and the most dangerous are what are called the opioid painkillers, oxycodone, OxyContin, etc. But there are also sedatives, and of course there are also the drugs that are often used to treat ADHD. And this has been highlighted a lot. In fact, next Saturday will be Drug Take Back Day across the nation. And well over 4,000 localities, many in Wisconsin, have agreed to help turn in a lot of these drugs that are in their medicine cabinets to law enforcement so that it's done legally, but it's also done in an environmentally conscious way because we don't want to see people flushing them down the toilet.
Right. When you say there's been a softening of anti-drug messaging, why is that?
Well, one, the only anti-drug media campaign has been reduced over the past few years in funding, and we're working right now with Congress to get some adequate funding. The other part was that I'm not so sure that some of the messages were particularly appropriate or worked as well. So last year, we convened a group of experts from across the country that know about messaging to young people, and we completely redid the media campaign, and it was released a few months ago across the country in the Bronx, Milwaukee, and Portland, and we know that it's a much more effective messaging system for young people.
And what is the messaging system? What gets through?
Well, we had a whole host of different for instance, television messages that were on everything from MTV to the ABC Family Channel and on and on. And the other was lots of social media, being able to use Facebook and many other things that young people look at. And the message basically is not so much about any particular drug, but it is about making good choices. And the theme, which has really resonated well, has been called Above the Influence. And this is young people who, with the right information, will make a conscious choice to stay above the influence. And that above the influence includes underage drinking making good choices, including not using drugs.
Mm-hmm. We're also in a culture, I want to go back to drinking for a moment, because I find these figures just astounding. I have alcoholism in my family, which keeps me from not drinking, but I can see what happens with alcoholism. Among young adults ages 18 to 25 last year, the rate of binge drinking was 41.7%, and the rate of heavy drinking was 13.7%. I can only believe that these young people, many of them, are going to have substantial problems with alcohol during their lives, and that percentage just astounds me.
Well, and we know that about one in five people will be affected differently. Their brain will react differently to that alcohol than the other four. The other part of that is young people going to college, so that freshman year, and alcohol use and binge drinking. And so we're trying to work very closely, as are a number of other federal government groups, with college and university presidents, because they're very intent on trying to reduce that problem.
I've noticed that. I have a young son who just started his freshman year, and the campus has been doing a lot of educational programming related to drinking, which is valuable, I think.
I do, too.
Yeah. Then also the thing that is, well, a lot of this is alarming, but the number of people who are on the road endangering you and me and everybody and themselves is quite high under the influence of alcohol or under the influence of other kinds of drugs.
Right. The federal government has tested for over four decades for alcohol-impaired driving. And actually, there's been a lot of success in reducing the number of people on the road under the influence of alcohol. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't, that we can't take our eye off the ball and on that, and that we don't have to work hard. But for the first time in 2007, the federal government also tested for drugs, both licit and illicit drugs. And we saw that about 8% of the nighttime drivers Friday or Saturday tested positive for marijuana. Now, this is also confirmed with another survey called Monitoring the Future that the University of Michigan does. And the 12th graders interviewed talked about having smoked marijuana prior to getting behind the wheel. So it's dangerous for them and dangerous, as you said, for all of us.
We talked earlier about where the drugs are coming from. What about drugs like ecstasy and marijuana, even heroin? Where are those coming from?
Well, we have a wide array of where the drugs can come from. Ecstasy is generally seen as coming across the Canadian border, manufactured in different laboratories. And it was quite popular with rave, or associated with rave parties. Marijuana is really been very interesting to see changes quite often, and it's still a significant problem coming from Mexico. But we are seeing lots, and I think you just had a huge case in Wisconsin where marijuana is being grown on public lands, park lands. And then the last place is hydroponic or within houses. And when you look at the number of foreclosed or abandoned houses or really
yes.
readily available housing, they can be quickly converted into essentially an indoor marijuana farm. Those are all the places.
And tobacco use, you looked at that. We have had all kinds of messaging on the use of tobacco. Has that gone down?
Tobacco is one of the success stories.
Is it?
Generally across the country on tobacco use. Now, we did not meet, the United States did not meet its most recent goal on high school tobacco use. But I think that the fact that it's not advertised, the fact that we have had a real focus as a result of the litigation on underage use of tobacco, these are... I think that we can apply some of the same ideas on the drug problem.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much money you have at your disposal to talk about the dangers of drugs, but if you had unlimited kinds of funds, what is it that needs to be done other than probably a lot more messaging?
Well, if I had unlimited funds, one, I would continue to work in a really collaborative way, as we're doing right now with the Department of Education, with Health and Human Services, because talking about the drug problem in isolation doesn't work. Talking about it as a part of healthcare and primary healthcare, talking about it as a part of good choices for young people about nutrition, exercise, and by the way, the meta-analysis on prevention already confirms this, that if you give young people clear and consistent and age-appropriate messages about the dangers of underage drinking, nicotine, making good choices about nutrition and exercise, and talking about the dangers of drugs, that they will actually make the right decisions. We need to do that.
And I would think maybe everybody should be doing some kind of exercise program. It's hard to do drugs and be a runner, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a plodder when it goes out there. So as I turn 60 now, my minutes per mile has kind of increased.
Let's welcome phone calls for you. We are speaking with the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the first half hour. Gil Karlikowski is our guest, and here is our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The results from the 2009 National Survey on Drug Use and Health have just been released. Let's go to Ben from Madison, our first call. Hi, Ben.
Hi. There's only one really effective known pharmacological treatment for amphetamine addiction. It's ibogaine, derived from a West African rainforest plant used in religious ritual. Unlike, for instance, methadone, it gives a cure after a single use. It's not a substitution drug. Unfortunately, it's itself illegal. And I'm wondering if Mr. Karlikowski's office has looked at this and if there's any prospects of it being legalized, at least for clinical trials.
You know, Ben, actually, I am not the least bit familiar with that. And we have our deputy director is a longtime researcher in this area. And I really wish he was on the call now instead of me, because because it is not something that I know about or I'm familiar with. But I'm very glad that you brought it to my attention, and I will certainly sit down with Dr. McClellan and ask him to update me on this.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Adam in Milwaukee. Hello.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. Firstly, my belief is that under the last few modern Democrat presidents, we have pursued economic policies in the area of foreign trade and banking deregulation that have caused such dislocations in the American economy that I think it's caused this large amount of unemployment. And I think it's caused a lot of despair in the economy, and especially younger people. If you're an older worker, you know, maybe you can just retire now and just say to heck with it and, you know, get your Social Security. But, you know, if you're in your 20s or maybe you're approaching 30, this is the longest period of unemployment for Americans that we've faced since World War II. And I think a lot of these people are very, very despondent, especially in some of these northern communities.
So they turn to drugs? Is that where you're
economically depressed?
So they turn to drugs? Is that where you're going with this, Adam?
I think so. I have friends that did that kind of thing in an earlier age. So I have some knowledge of this. I think it's a very important contributing factor.
Okay. Mr. Kerlikowski.
And I think he's raised an excellent point. There was a recent piece in The Atlantic called The Lingering Effects of the Recession and questioning what would happen as we go through this really difficult time, even though things are starting to improve. And the comments were more around alcohol. And, of course, we've seen increases in package sales even during tough economic times. But I think that his point is excellent, and it really tells you how we should be giving young people the right messaging about having a good education, being hard workers, and you know, the drug issue just has so many effects on our economy, on healthcare, on a bright, educated workforce that that is going to carry the water forward for the country in this area, and drug use and self-medication with drugs and or alcohol is not a way forward.
And as you well know from all your work in policing, there is a direct link. There must be. If people are unemployed, don't have any money, and they're using drugs, they're getting them somehow. So there's a link between crime and drugs.
Well, we do know that in particular, and I wouldn't associate it as much with an economic issue as with the fact that we do in testing in 10 places around the country, people that are arrested. And, of course, people that are arrested regardless of what they're charged with, from actually murder to shoplifting, the increase among them for the use of drugs is so much higher than the general population.
More phone calls in a moment. We're speaking with the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy this first half hour, Gil Kerlikowski. Later, we'll be talking about why people are using drugs and how you get off drugs. So that's coming up. This is the Ideas Network. Tony is our next caller from Janesville. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to see if yourself and the speaker could comment on the idea that I have that, making alcohol a legal substance in the United States is inconsistent when we have other drugs, like, you know, making alcohol legal is inconsistent with, say, something that's on a similar level like marijuana. So the message is inconsistent that we say that, you know, it's okay for us to, you know, be able to use a drug like alcohol to, you know, alter our perception, but yet we make other ones illegal. And I just I think by sending that inconsistent message, we're almost opening the door for more of a use of drugs. And I was just wondering if yourself.
Gil, what do you think?
Sure. The Obama administration has had a very clear and consistent message from the beginning that legalizing drugs, including legalizing marijuana, is just a non-starter. There lots and lots and lots of reasons. And, of course, people are watching California and talking about what may or may not happen in California because it is on the ballot for making possession of marijuana in small amounts by adults, removing the state criminal sanctions. But the reasons that I think that it's important to understand is that, one, marijuana is not a benign drug. We've seen an increase in the potency of marijuana over over the last number of years. So it's not, as some people say, your grandfather's or your father's marijuana. If you look at the calls to help lines, I pick up the phone and say, look, I have a substance abuse problem and I need help. These are voluntary calls. Marijuana leads the way when it comes to substances. And there are lots of other reasons, but listen, we could end up taking more than your entire show to talk about why this administration opposes legalization.
Mm-hmm. What about the use of heroin? We've heard some dramatic stories here in Milwaukee, particularly about heroin cases. Is there an increase in the use of this horrendous drug?
Yes. There are two things that seem to be driving heroin increases around the country, and we are particularly seeing it with young people. I was recently in the Southwest where two young high school students had both died from heroin use. And we seem to have forgotten, one, how dangerous heroin is, and we do have a bit of a memory problem when it comes to the dangerousness of drugs. Secondly, young people that were using or abusing prescription drugs, and they didn't really see prescription drugs as dangerous because, well, after all, they were a prescription or came out of the medicine cabinet. When they could no longer afford or obtain those prescription drugs, they would turn to heroin. Lastly, a lot of the heroin use has been not through a needle and injection, but among young people has been through snorting heroin or even smoking heroin.
Really?
It is incredibly dangerous.
Cocaine, we haven't talked about that.
Well, cocaine actually is a bright spot in this country. We have seen almost a 30% decrease in cocaine use and consumption over the last 3 years, and that trend is still continues when it comes to that. And we think there are two reasons. One is that among people talking about the dangers of cocaine, and particularly in the African-American community where crack cocaine was such a significant problem, when you talk to people in those neighborhoods, et cetera, they really send a strong message that how dangerous crack cocaine is and what a disaster it has been in so many neighborhoods. So there's one reason. The other is that the cocaine interdictions by forces along in South America, along the border, have really reduced the amount of cocaine availability.
And something we heard a lot about last year, or maybe it was the year before, time goes pretty fast, was the use of methamphetamines.
Methamphetamine took a real downturn across the country, and remember that methamphetamine is kind of a regional drug, and actually, it's a good point for your listeners, we don't have a national drug problem, we have a series of regional drug problems, so it was a West Coast, Midwest, some areas of the South kind of phenomena, but in 2006, Congress passed a law to put methamphetamine, a pseudoephedrine products behind the counter, mm-hmm. the old medications that are used to as precursors to make methamphetamine. And you had to show, of course, as you do now, identification, et cetera. Unfortunately, the groups that have kind of gotten around that federal law, and they use all kinds of false ID and other things to buy the cold medications to make this. A real bright spot in methamphetamine has been Oregon that made these cold products a prescription only 4 years ago. And the numbers of methamphetamine problems have just plummeted in Oregon. Recently, Governor Haley Barbour in Mississippi just enacted a similar law. And so we're watching that very closely to see if they have the same success rate as Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And finally, here's an email that's come in. If you have time to just respond to this, and then we'll let you carry on with your important business. My son was an honor student and attends the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He said by the end of their senior year, it was astounding the number of kids doing drugs, including him. He said their group all said that they would never, that they found it pathetic. But by the end of the year, there were so many involved, valedictorians, scholarship athletes, gifted musicians. And at his orientation at UW, I listened with disappointment when I heard the Madison police say they overlooked drinking in the dorm rooms at the game, but didn't want kids running down State Street naked.
Well, I think that we have to give a message out that that's part of the president's national drug control strategy, which he released from the Oval Office in May, and that is we have to approach this in a balanced way. We've really looked at it mostly through a criminal justice lens, and what we need to do is understand this is also a public health problem. About education and prevention, and that's why he has asked for an increase in prevention funding in the 2011 budget and an increase in treatment funding, and I think that that's important. The other thing I would tell you, though, is that all of the information survey data shows that most young people think that everybody is doing drugs, and in fact, the survey information shows that actually most young people are not doing drugs. But if you were to ask them, they'd say, oh, yeah, gosh, everybody does it. And actually, everybody doesn't do it.
Thank you so much for being with us. And if people want to read the report in its entirety, which is very interesting, I imagine they can go to the Internet, right?
Yes, you can. And we have WhiteHouseDrugPolicy.gov. It has a lot of information, and I think that Health and Human Services, a lot of this really sound work is available, and then people can make really informed decisions based upon facts and not rumor.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Our guest, the first part of the show, is the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Gil Kerlikowske. Our guest talking about the report, which is well worth reading because it is an extensive report that looks at the current illicit drug use among people 12 and older, but then it breaks it down to use of hallucinogens, alcohol, to methamphetamine, marijuana, heroin, cocaine, etc. And you can get those statistics and the highlights of the report on that website that he just told you about, WhiteHouseDrugPolicy.gov. We continue our conversation. Obviously, if you're looking at a report that looks at the use of all of these drugs, the question comes up, why is there such use of drugs in this country? And it can sometimes, as you well know, everybody gets affected by this. If it's yourself or somebody in your family, the use of drugs is so widespread in this country that it can really bring a lot of people down. So we're going to switch focus here and speak with Dr. Joseph Lee, the next part of our program, child and adolescent psychiatrist and adolescent addiction specialist at Hazelden Center for Youth and Families. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Lee and also some emails. We have many of them coming in. We'll get to as many as we can. Our number is 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Dr. Joseph Lee, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is there a time in our lives when we're particularly susceptible to wanting to take drugs for whatever reason, and then because we take them so early, we have more problems with them during our lives?
Well, there are definitely different kinds of populations who get into substance use. For example, there is a 15 and under crowd and demographic that researchers are very interested in, young kids who are into kind of behavioral problems. They may have ADHD and other mental health issues. Those kids tend to use very early and engage in other behaviors, and they have a different kind of trajectory when you map out their substance use problems throughout their life. And there's that demographic. And then there's other demographics, people who are professionals who use later in life older people who develop medical problems such as pain conditions, and they use medications and then become addicted. So it's a wide spectrum, but of course, as a child psychiatrist, I'm most focused on the youth because I think prevention, of course, is the best medicine.
And the youth, and this would be something they would take. I know there are millions of reasons because there are millions of people involved here, but is it a peer pressure thing? Is it a cool thing to do? Is it because they're having some psychological pain and they raid their parents' medicine cabinet and find some drugs that will be helpful? What is it?
Well, you know, addiction is as old as man. I think when people are experimenting with substances, people have been doing it in civilizations throughout time. You layer that upon a general human condition, which is that we are very good at seeing other people's problems and not our own.
Mm.
And when people use substances, it just accentuates that. You add immaturity and youth on top of that, and that's what you get. You know, when I was growing up, my friends and I would kind of make fun of some of the anti-drug campaigns and kind of say, don't you want to be cool? Everyone's doing it, you know, and that really isn't the reason that kids are using it. It's more a complex social dynamic and more of peer association rather than peer pressure, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And the drugs of choice for these young people, and maybe we ought to break it down into different ages, I don't know, 15 or under, you, heaven forbid anybody would start using drugs then, but I guess they are, and those who are a little older in their adolescence, what are their drugs of choice?
Well, kids, depending on the generation, will choose different things. Prescription drug use for young people has skyrocketed, and that includes things like benzodiazepines, Xanax, clonazepam. It includes Adderall and medications for ADHD. It includes pain medications like OxyContin. And so kids tend to experiment around with various things. And one of the things that I noticed with this particular generation versus some of the previous ones is that the kids are mixing different medications together. So this great government survey lays out how many people are using drugs. But what we see is that kids are using 2, 3, 7 different drugs.
Ooh.
A week. So they may smoke marijuana at night, use ecstasy on the weekends, raid their parents' medicine cabinet when there's an opportunity. And that really is a dangerous, dangerous way for kids to get addicted.
Ooh, I would imagine some of those would interact with each other and create really bad consequences, don't they?
Really bad consequences. You know, we live in a time when there's great information out on the internet and the media about addiction, but then there's also, I would say, an equal amount of bad information. And kids will go online, they'll talk to each other and kind of become resident experts about what chemicals to mix with what.
Oh.
And they feel like they're experts. And that's why you see an increase in accidental deaths. You see an increase in emergency room visits, and you see an increase in addiction. So a typical kid might just start out using cigarettes, then they might smoke cannabis, and then they try some pills, they get hooked on OxyContin, and then in a moment of desperation, they can go to using other substances like heroin. This isn't a scary story to scare people into not using drugs. This is the story I hear every day. To give some people a context of where I work in Plymouth, Minnesota. We have a 76-bed residential facility, and we also do outpatient treatment for kids and young adults. So I have the privilege of seeing kids from all across the country and even international kids. So I have a pulse on how kids might be thinking, what their attitudes are, and how their drug use started. And the story I just told you about the progression is absolutely true, and I would say happens about 95% of the time.
Oh, my goodness. And then you have to ask, why is it? What do they get from it? Do they not have to worry about their future, or is it just sort of a deadening feeling? If there is a payoff, why do they do it? What are they getting?
Well, it's a short-term payoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So addictive substances in the short term provide relief or pleasure. And then the long term, I think young people just don't think about it. If you think about it from a neurological standpoint, you know, we know brains don't mature fully, or the important parts of the brains don't mature fully until you're about 25. And a child at the age of 15, their logic is just as good as an adult. So if you gave them a paper and pencil test about, you know, don't drink and drive and what's the right thing to do, kids at the age of 15 will get it right. But under a lot of emotional stress or pressure, that logic starts to fall apart because other parts of their brain just haven't matured.
Mm-hmm. And the emotional stress they're feeling is what?
Oh, it could be, you know, a kid handing them a beer at a party. It could be, you know, them trying to weigh the risk and reward of any particular situation. You know, maybe they had 2 beers at a party and decide, am I going to drive or not? You know, before the party, they may have told their parents, hey, you know, I'm not going to drink and drive, and they sound logical, and the parents are like, okay, you sound like you understand me. And then at the party, under certain circumstances, their logic starts to fall down, and that really is a difference between younger people and adults.
Yeah. How hard is it, and maybe there's a continuum here, Dr. Lee, we keep hearing that it's so hard to break an addiction to many of these drugs. Are there certain drugs where you just really have to work very hard and your chances of success at getting one of your patients off these drugs are little?
Any of them can be difficult, but I would say for the young people here, you know, heroin and pain medications, it becomes a very complicated situation. So we see a big increase in the number of people coming into our facility with pain medication addiction and heroin addiction over the past few years. And I think that is symbolic across the country of an increasing problem getting off these particular substances. But it's also important to highlight that we have a lot of kids that get well. You know, we have a lot of kids who come in crisis, families are in crisis, and they do get well. So nothing is impossible to treat.
Yeah, and there's the key. How do they get well?
Well, sometimes it takes time and dedication. You know, addiction is not something that just affects individuals. It affects entire families. You know, the ripples of addiction affect everything and everyone. And when you work with young people especially, you have to bring those systems into treatment. You have to talk about families. You have to get them out of their environment, you know, where their friends are. You have to get them to rethink their relationships, their school. You have to deal with the legal system. And that's really the only way to do it. And the earlier you can reach them, the better off we are.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you hear this with books, you know, if you come from a family that has books, you'll be a reader. If you don't, forget it. It's not going to happen, that the influence of the family is so strong. Is it true of drugs, too? If your parents are taking drugs, that you will, too?
Well, there might be a genetic predisposition for certain people to develop an addiction, and we certainly know that's true from family studies. But I wouldn't say just because your parents experimented with substances that you're liable to.
What about a lot of young people now have parents who were growing up in the 60s and 70s when drug use was pretty darn prevalent in this country, particularly on college campuses. What do you think about parents owning up to their drug use?
As long as the parents are very honest about the pros and cons of their drug use and the potential pitfalls, I would encourage communication. A lot of people don't talk to their kids about it for that reason. Talking to your kids, it's not an opportunity to prove to your kid that you were really cool in college. It's an opportunity really to educate them about problems they may have experienced using substances, or they may have known somebody else in college or high school and they used substances and had a problem. Messaging is incredibly important for young people. We can't glorify drug use, and I think a prominent problem in our society is that we give a lot of mixed messages in the media. We glorify drug use, and then we also, you know, have shows like Intervention and Celebrity Rehab, and so kids are bombarded by a lot of confusing messages about it.
And how are we glorifying drug use in our society? Are there TV shows that do this? I'm out of that loop.
Well, you know, any TV show or movie you see, they treat drug use almost like a rite of passage, that it's just something to do, and there's kind of a cool thing associated with it. That messaging actually works for kids. You know, to give some background, I think our previous guest talked about smoking cigarettes and how the messaging impacted the decrease in use of cigarettes by teenagers. And what we see with cannabis and other drugs is that messaging is getting lost. And kids are taking terms like prescribed, natural, legal, organic, even the term like rehab, and they're misconstruing it and throwing these things together, and that's what leads to mixed messaging.
Let's go to phone call. Stacy is on the road. Hi, Stacy.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was actually calling to refute a call that came before, but that was with the other guest, and I'm so happy to be talking to Dr. Joe.
Yes.
You can call me Joe.
Dr. Lee.
Joe. I'm so used to Dr. Drew, so I'm Dr. Joe from Hazelden. I celebrated 10 years clean last Friday.
All right.
Congratulations.
And I was just a little disturbed by the phone call where the gentleman said that when people become unemployed for long periods of time, they start using, because my experience is that the longest periods of unemployment I had were in my years of using. I didn't lose jobs and then start using. I lost jobs because I was using. And I think that there's a lot of misconceptions about drug addiction as a disease, and just because you remove the chemicals doesn't mean somebody's well. And right now I'm on my way to work. The chemicals were removed a long time ago, but I wasn't necessarily healthy and ready to get back at them right away. And I think there's just a lot of misconceptions about what people can do to help it or not help it, which chemicals are better than others, and it's just, it's a really confusing disease, and it affects so many people, and this is a particularly difficult state to try to get clean and stay clean in. Alcohol is connected to absolutely everything we do, and I just wanted to share that and to, I don't know, try to clear up that misconception a little bit. I don't think people turn to drugs so much as, I don't know, I think they take them because they need to feel better or because they have a predisposition or, I don't know.
Well, 10 years is a good long time, and congratulations to you. Your response, Dr. Lee.
Well, I think the caller made some excellent points, and again, congratulations. One is that addiction is a chronic condition. So, you know, kids might see celebrities going off to rehab, 30 days for this, 30 days for that, and they've kind of made a caricature of the rehab process. And so what she's highlighting with her own experience is that addiction is often lifelong. There's a lot of successes and failures, and she's obviously in a point where she's been very successful. The second thing is that being sober is not necessarily getting well. You know, being sober allows you to open a door to work on some of the other problems in your life. This is especially true when you think about youth, because youth who get into substance use have a high rate of mental health issues and behavior problems and family problems and legal problems. I think the stereotype back in the day was that if the person was addicted and you get them sober, they're somehow whole again. And I think the more accurate scientific data is showing that people who develop addiction, some of them anyway, have a lot of vulnerabilities for mental health issues and other kinds of vices, and that opening the gateway to sobriety really just gives them the opportunity to work on those fundamental issues.
Let's take on this, because I don't want to take 50 million phone calls on this, which we're getting. So let's deal with this issue of marijuana for a moment. Here's an email. I think it's hypocritical for our society to continue to condone the production and consumption of alcohol and tobacco while continuing to combat the legalization of marijuana. Thousands of people die annually as a result of alcohol and tobacco use and consumption, either directly or indirectly. There is absolutely no reason why marijuana should remain illegal. It should be legalized across the board, regulated, distributed, and sold the same as alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah, I think the caller actually makes some good points, but may not be thinking the issue completely through. I do agree that there might be some hypocrisy in both our legal system about the messaging and how we treat other drugs. That being said, we have to be careful how kids interpret the message about marijuana, because they'll use terms like medicinal marijuana and legal marijuana. And I see kids from California and other states that allow medicinal marijuana. And what I have to say is most of the kids there that are lining up and that have medicinal marijuana cards do not have refractory glaucoma or chronic pain or terminal cancer. You know, they tell me stories of getting their medicinal marijuana card, going to the beach and smoking with their friends.
Oh, really? Interesting.
The interesting thing about addiction is that not everybody who uses will develop an addiction. You know, so it's like having a car, and let's say that 8 out of 10 people never have problems with this car, and they love it, it's great, they can't see anything wrong with it. And 2 out of 10 people have problems, or they get into accidents. You know, it's going to be really hard for those 2 people to convince the other 8 that there's a problem with the car. And that's kind of the thing with addiction, is that we can only see our own experience with it. So if someone's experimented with something and they haven't had a problem, they automatically think that other people shouldn't have a problem if they use like them, and that's simply not true.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this half hour of the program is Dr. Joseph Lee, child and adolescent psychiatrist and adolescent addiction specialist at Hazelden Center for Youth and Families. Our phone number, we have one line open, is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's take this email, Dr. Lee, because it is something that many people are worried about, I'm sure, and are in the same situation. I have a friend with a serious opiate addiction. He is getting prescriptions from more than one doctor. What can I do?
You need to get the person some help. I think when it comes to family members and friends, you have to know where boundaries are. You know, you can't rescue people yourself, but you can refer them to people who can help. And it may require that you use legal means, but I would first use friends and family and reach out to someone else, because it really is quite difficult and stressful for people to be holding the lifeline for a person who's addicted. And this, again, goes to the point that addiction is a family systems issue. And so your entire peer network is affected. And so I really feel for the person who wrote the email. And I would say get more support. You can't do this by yourself. And then get together a plan to help this person, do an intervention, use whatever resources necessary. Because you can only do so much. You know, you understand that the person has a problem, but you can't play the role of friend, therapist, father, mother all at once.
Yeah. Who do you count on, and whose support do you have to have as you work through addiction with your patients?
Well, you know, we have a 12-step facility here at Hazelden, and so we definitely, for young people, get the support of family members. We get the support of, if they're on probation, from parole officers. We get support from their schools. And then it's really critical that people have some sense of community, that they have other people who've gone through similar experiences that they can associate with, hang out with, have different kinds of fun instead of getting drunk or using drugs every weekend. And so community is a critical part of recovery.
Mm-hmm. Alan at work is next. Hi, Alan, go ahead. Hello.
I'm calling. I just wanted to say, it's like, hey, I had a big problem with drinking and stuff, and I got like 12 DWIs in my life.
Whoa. Yeah. So,
and, you know, I just kind of quit drinking, and I just smoke a little bit of pot, you know, bowl after work every day. And ever since that, for the last 12 years, I've never gotten in trouble again. That's what I wanted to say. The difference between alcohol and pot is alcohol, I got in trouble all the time. And when I started smoking a little bit of pot, I've never gotten in trouble again.
Do you drive after you've been smoking?
Sometimes I do, but normally I don't. I just like to catch a little buzz when I get home after work.
Dr. Lee?
Yeah, this is again, some dangerous messaging, because young people who are using substances are using more than one substance. So they're not saying alcohol or marijuana. It's alcohol and marijuana. You know, so I think people come with the argument of kind of they do a Dante's Inferno levels of hell and what drug is worse and what drug is. And we really want to take the moral message out of it. We're not judging people or making a moral statement. But let's assume that someone says that marijuana is like taking candy from a baby, and that drinking alcohol or using other drugs is like stealing from a bank. Well, the truth is that most of the kids I see are both stealing from a baby and stealing from a bank. So it's not kind of an either or, but I would say an and. I'm happy that the caller hasn't gotten in trouble. And there are many people who are able to find their own way in recovery or to sustain some type of functioning in life. But again, one person's story does not translate to everyone else's. And that, I think that's where a lot of misconceptions start, is that, you know, some people have a formula for using, or they moderate their use somehow, and they think that that might apply to other people. And that simply isn't true. It isn't true for diets. It's not true for exercise plans. It's not true for studying habits. And it's not true for drugs.
What do you think about Alan? It's not just Alan. People driving, you know, when they're under the influence of marijuana or under the influence of any amount of alcohol, it seems to me as though you're not quite as sharp as you would be if you didn't have those in your body.
Yeah, it does. Cannabis and alcohol both delay coordination. Alcohol may be more so, but they both delay coordination. They can both impair memory. You know, they can both affect mood, and so obviously better to drive without them.
Let's go next to Dan in Beloit. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm just calling with a couple different things. I agree that not everybody's the same. And like you said, like, just like a diet, not everything works for everybody else. I smoked marijuana in high school. I didn't smoke a lot. I knew when to stop. And I stopped cold turkey when I decided it wasn't for me anymore and took up weightlifting instead. But I do want to say it did help me extremely. I should say a large amount in high school, especially with math and stuff like that. When I was high, man, I could ace the test without a problem. It really slowed me down and kind of helped me out. I'm not condoning it, not saying they should do it. Like you said, there's a different story for everybody. But at the same time, my biggest issue, and it's not totally on subject, but it slightly is when it comes to poverty level, we have a lot of people smoking marijuana that are on food stamps and stuff like that. I get drug tested. I'm a truck driver. I get drug tested randomly. I get drug tested for a job. I get constantly drug tested. And my taxes from this job go towards those food stamps and medical card and all that kind of stuff. Why isn't the people on the medical card and on these food stamps being tested for this, for drugs as well? I think that would help with the poverty level quite a bit as well. If you have the money to get some weed, you got the money to get some food. So that's pretty much my comment.
All right, Dr. Lee.
Yeah, I think the caller raises a couple of concerns. I think the first thing is that most people who use drugs, and the government survey said this, are employed, are fully employed. And so the vast majority of people who are using substances regularly are employed people, right? And like the other caller said previously, people lose jobs because they use and whatnot. So it's not as if people go and have a certain poverty level and then start to use drugs. And I definitely don't want to categorize people in certain economic hardships as people who are prone to using drugs, because that isn't a fact.
And on that note, we have to end. I can't believe, I mean, just looked at the clock, we're out of time. Wow. Thank you, Chrissy Pease, for producing this hour. Thanks to Joseph Lee, Dr. Lee from Hazelden. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We will continue our Thursday broadcast following the news.